Okay, hello out there in Na'ala land. We begin again. This week is Parshas Vayishlach. As I promised you, a very special Parsha. I don't get credit for that. It's God Himself who gave us these Parshios. And this shir is Leila Nishas Racha Leah Bas Chaim Zvi. Okay, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim and Yaakov, and Jacob sends angels to Esav, his brother, to the land of Seir, to the field of Edom. He's sending angels. Well, we're translating according to Rashi. He sends angels. Could be sending messengers or emissaries. But Rashi says he sent, actually, really, they were angels he sent. He charged them as follows. Thus shall you say to my lord Esav. So said your servant Yaakov. I have lodged with Lavan, and I have lingered with him until now. I have acquired oxen and donkeys, sheep and servants and maidservants. And I am sending them to tell my lord to gain favor in your eyes. So, now, so we learn from here, first of all, that Yaakov did not rely on his own merits or on his righteousness. He wants to take practical measures to ensure safety. He's right away going to be confronted with Esav. He has to make preparations to prepare himself for what might be a very, very costly battle. Everything we learn always applies for the future. And this foreshadows the future experience of the Jewish people. As Rabban says, Ma'is Avos Sim Labanim. So therefore, what we have to learn out from here is we should always make threefold preparations. Whenever we're combating Esav, his descendants, Esav, of course, is Edom, allusion to all the nations. So we have to do prayer, gifts means appeasement, and battle, if necessary. So Rashi is saying we send some angels, and so a very interesting thing here. He's going to send all these angels, all these messengers. He's going to tell them what they should do when they meet Esav. How he tells them how to speak, what to say, and he tells each one individually. Wouldn't that be more economical to put them all together and tell them as a group? He's giving them the same shear. Get them all in a lecture room and tell them, listen here, Esav is a dangerous character. This is what you're to say. Say this, 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 and this. If he asks you that, then say this. He says that, then say this. But takes each one by himself. Says the Chafetz Chaim, this is to teach you that is something so important. Life, direction, future. How to bequeath to your children. You don't want to do it in a mass lecture. Each one deserves individual attention. Everyone by themselves. Everyone by themselves. Now, the general intent of Yaakov's message is he's trying to appease Esav. He's trying to impress Esav. They did not benefit any from the purchase from the birthright or all the blessings he got from Yitzchak. And that's what he's showing him by giving all these gifts to him. And that your continued hatred, Esav, is not justified. Okay. So he calls himself your servant Yaakov. So Yaakov pays honor to Esav by calling him my lord. He calls himself your servant. So Yaakov is saying that even though you have the birthright, you're still a very honorable individual, and therefore there's no reason for you to have any animosity or hatred towards me. And I dwelled with Lavan, so Rashi says, in Lavan Garti. Garti are the letters Targag. Even though I stayed with Lavan, that evil person, I worked all those years with Lavan nonetheless. V'tayag mitzvah shamarti. Even though I was with him, I still was steadfastly attached to keeping the Torah law, and in no way did I violate our rituals and our customs. And I delayed till now. I couldn't come earlier to pay my respects to you. Couldn't do it earlier. And I have acquired donkeys and oxen and maidservants and servants. So he says like this. This is Rashi. My father blessed me with the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth. But the humans and animals, they don't come either from heaven or from earth. So therefore, don't think that all that I have is because I got my father's birthright blessing. It's not true. What I have here is not from that blessing. No reason for you to hate me because I took the blessing. Don't try and kill me because of that, because what you see before you, which I'm giving to you, is not because of the birthright. So the angels, these emissaries, come back to Yaakov and they say, we came to your brother Esav, and he's heading towards you, and 400 men are with him. Whoa. Esav is preparing for battle, 400 soldiers. Yaakov came very frightened, and it distressed him. So he divided the people with him, and the flocks, herds, and camels into two camps. For he said, if Esav comes to one camp and strikes it down, then the remaining camp shall survive. And we'll see what else he's going to say. So obviously, Esav still bears a grudge against Yaakov, and he's waiting for that opportunity to take revenge. Why is Yaakov so afraid? We've seen this already. He's distressed because maybe, says Rashi, he'll have to kill someone else. I'm worried that I may have to hurt someone. Because if there's a battle, I can't just throw him garlands and roses. Battle means battle. And we see here also that the righteous never take their righteousness for granted. And he's worried. The last 20 years I didn't honor my father and my mother. Maybe I've forfeited some of my merits. So how does he prepare himself for battle? He divides the camp into two. He divides the people with him and the flocks, herds, and camels into two camps. Esav comes to one camp and strikes it down. And the other camp will survive. In the Chafetz Chaim's yeshiva, one day, and it was not Parshat Vayishlach, the Chafetz Chaim said very clairvoyantly, prophetically, but like a prophet of doom, if Esav will come and smite one camp, the other camp will yet survive. One student in yeshiva said, where is that place that will survive? The Chafetz Chaim quoted a pasuk in Navi, and Sion will be holy, will be an escape. These words were related to the Panovit Yerov, who took these words to heart. I have to escape and make a plate for the Jewish people. We have to divide in two. He picked himself up and went to the land of Israel. Those words were engraved on his mind and hewn into his heart. And indeed, in the entry into the Panovit Yeshiva is a pasuk from Navi, which is in the Kodesh Vaya Plata, and even on the entrance of the in the frontispiece of the building are those words also. That is the message of Panovich, the yeshiva. If one camp is smitten, that's indeed what happened in the Holocaust. The other camp will be holy, will be an escape. These were the words which motivated the Panovich Yerov. Then Yaakov said, God of my father Abraham, God of my father Yitzchak, God, who said to me, return to your land and to your relatives, and I will do good with you. I have been diminished by all the kindness and by all the truth that you've done for your servant. For with my staff, I crossed this Yarden, and now I have become two camps. So from here, the Ramban concludes, the Rashi says it as well, that Yaakov prepares himself for war, and he realizes even if one camp falls, the other one will manage to survive. He's hedging his bets. He's dividing. And this basically portends the destiny of the Jewish people. Even though in many countries there will be decrees against the Jewish people, and they will be persecuted and prosecuted, pillaged and plundered and murdered in one land, the Jewish people will never be extinguished entirely. One king will be cruel to them, another king will be beneficial to them and offer them refuge. So the next thing is God, Yaakov invokes God's aid through prayer. Katonti mikol chaserim, I have been diminished by all the kindness, as my merits have been diminished in the consequence of all the kindness. There's no question. If God does goodness for me, I have to pay a price. It's not for free. And perhaps because of all the good that's been done to me, I've run out of merit and I can fall into harm's way, into the hands of Esav, the evil person. And I crossed this Yarden just with my staff, only my staff. No silver, no gold, no cattle. All I had was the staff. And therefore I implore you, please rescue me, even though I don't have the merits. But think of all the kindness you've done on my behalf. I'm not deserving of it. But what's the point if Asa strikes me down? What's the point of having the blessings? Yaakov's greatest fear is that Asa will come and strike down mother and child. As far as he's concerned, God's already fulfilled his promise of protection because he crossed the Jordan just with his staff. He doesn't know if God's promise will also extend to the other people in his party. Rescue me, please, from the hand of my brother, the hand of Esav. For I feared lest he come and strike me down, mother and children. And you had said, I will surely do good with you, with your offspring like the sand of the sea, which is too numerous to count. And he spent that night there, and he took from what he had come to his hand a tribute to Esav, his brother. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 nursing camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 she-donkeys and 10 he-donkeys. He put in his servants' charge each drove separately and said to the servants, pass on ahead of me and leave a space between drove and drove. Mean 8 or later, make a space between each group of gifts we're going to give to Esav. Instructed the first one as follows, when my brother Esav meets you and asks you, saying, whose are you? Where are you going? And whose are these that are before you? Shall say, your servant Yaakov's. Is a tribute sent to my lord, to Esav, and behold, he himself is behind us. And he instructed the second and also the third, as well as all those who followed the drove, saying, like the Chofetz Chaim said, each one separately, something so important you can't do it in a group lecture. In this manner shall you speak to Esav when you find him. And say, moreover, Yaakov is behind us. Little excitement in the Nahalel studio over here. Okay. And he slept that night, hoping for prophetic prayer. He didn't get that communication. So the next thing he does, he sends a gift to Esav. So the fact that the Torah, which is so economical and doesn't waste an extra letter, an extra word, certainly not even a crown of a letter, the fact that it details all the elements of Yaakov's gift means that the Torah approves of it and Yaakov's method of trying to appease his brother via a gift. Whoops. And make sure you make a space between one drove and the next drove. And the point was like this. Yaakov, Esav is a person who's driven by greed. The agenda was, if you put all the animals together, he'll see it, he'll think, it's a lot. But that's all. But if you do it drove by drove, he sees one drove, one group of animals, whoa. And then there's an end. There's another, whoa. And it's over. All right. Another one. Another one. That's all. Another one. By seeing all these people, this was to say, wow, what a gift. This is going to really appeal to the base instincts of Esav. Who wants gimme, 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 gimme. He wants Esav to take notice of this. Very clever. He similarly instructed the second, also the third, as well as those who followed in droves, saying, this manner shall you speak to Esav when you find him. He shall say, moreover, behold, your servant Yaakov is behind us, and I will appease him with the tribute that precedes me, and afterwards I shall face him, perhaps he will forgive me. Perhaps I will appease him, appease his face, the tribute that precedes me. So, achapra means, this is what Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, on Yom Kippur we're trying to achieve three things. Mechila, slicha, and kapara. Mechila is a civil, it's a term from civil jurisprudence. It's a legal term. It means to release. Our situation with the Almighty is an impossible situation. There is no way you can ever make up for all we've done. Nothing wrong. We ask God, we have no other recourse, but God, you should release us from our debt. That's mechila. But we're not content with that. We also want God to forgive us. We realize the sinning is a dynamic, and we ask God, not only should you release us, but also we ask God, please forgive us, be soleach. But we also understand that sinning is a dynamic. There is retinue, there's a blotch, there's ash, there's residue. And we realize because of this dynamic we've sinned, we ask God also to mechaper. Kaper means to scour. There's a stain on the pot, it's After kapara means it's gone. There's nothing left. God, please rewrite the book so that all these pages of error, that they're gone. So that's what Yaakov is saying over here. Yaakov is saying to Esav, please, appease me. Let's not remember, but bygones be bygones, let's bury the hatchet. It's over with, really. Don't get excited. It's already done. So the tribute passed on before him while he spent the night in the camp. Rashi tells over the Medrash that panav means lefanav. Esav's face became very angry, implying that Yaakov also became very angry. What's Yaakov al panav? Why is Yaakov angry? He was incensed. He was furious. He had to go through all this business, give away all his money, all his possessions, a flatter, evil person like Esav. And the Shemesh Shul explains that Yaakov's anger was actually directed at himself, that he had to compromise his complete faith. Instead of trusting in God, he has to go through all these histrionics and gesticulations and efforts to try and appease Esav. And he spent that night in the camp, not in his tent, but in the camp together with the servants, dressed for combat. As they come at night, he's there with them, ready to engage in battle. He got up that night and took his two wives and two handmaids and 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Yabuk. So Rashi quotes the Medrash that Yaakov concealed Dinah in the chest and locked it so that Esav, the evil man, should not put his glance on this woman to marry her. And Chazal are not from here. I believe this question is stronger than the answer. Because Yaakov kept her from Esav, and she could have had a good influence upon him. He was punished later by the abduction, of Shechem of Dinah. I mean, what father would not do what Yaakov did? Who wants to expose in person their daughter to a creep like Esav? So the Bali Musar say, again, I really believe the question is stronger than the answer, but the Bali Musar say like this. It should have terribly saddened him that his duty as a father forced him to deprive Esav of the good influence of Dinah. And instead of having this bad feeling of remorse, he did this without any feeling of compassion for Esav. So say the Bali Musar. And when he took them over and had them cross over the stream, he sent them all over his possessions. And now Yaakov is left alone. Famous episode. Yaakov struggling with the angel. Yaakov was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. When he perceived that he could not overcome him, he struck the socket of his hip. And Yaakov's hip socket was dislocated as he wrestled with him, and he said, "Let me go, for dawn is broken." And Yaakov says, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." We'll come back to the naming in just a moment. Okay, so Yaakov had everyone go over the river before him. He's left himself behind, and then he remembered the vessels. So the Gemara in Chulin says he went back for the pachim ketanim, the small earthenware pitchers. He returned to fetch them. Rabbi Ben Abachaya says pachim ketanim, meaning not small pitchers, but pitchers of the young children. He didn't want them to perish from the thirst, so he went back to get them something which would last them on the journey. Okay, so the rabbis say here that by tzaddikim, manu mechavu v'leim yosu megufim, that their money is dearer to them than their possession. Yaakov is risking himself by going over the river, confronting Esav, his 400 men, but he went there to get his possessions. That shows that his money is dearer to him than his body. What does that mean? So the interpretation is the following. It means that someone who earns money properly, in accord with Shulchan Aruch, doesn't violate, doesn't cheat, doesn't steal, that money has a value. And that's dear to a tzaddik. He doesn't want to see it go. That's very important if you do something in accord with Shulchan Aruch and with all the laws of integrity. Therefore, it acquires meaning. It acquires value. And that night, Yaakov gets into a fight. He struggles with an angel. The Kishimon Amin wrestled with him. So the rabbis explained this is the angel of Esav. Esav's protecting angel in the guise of a man. We'll see how this is significant in a moment. So he's fighting with him all night long. And this angel who represents the Edomite Empire, he's going to fight Yaakov and Yaakov's descendants. He's wrestling with them to lead them astray. To take them off of God's path through the night. But when he sees that he cannot succeed, he says, "Let me go. The dawn is broken." And Yaakov says, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he says, "What is your name?" And he replies, "Yaakov." So the angels, really, it's the angels' plan of saying, "I have to go because I've already fulfilled my mission." And when he says the dawn is broken, he's implying, "Don't think I'm leaving you alone at night. It's a time of darkness, that's over already. Now's the time, the dawn is breaking. Now's the time of light." He says, "But I will not let you go until you bless me." And so Rashi says, "Until you acknowledge my right to the blessings which my father has bestowed upon me," and Esav disputes them. "So I want you to say explicitly the name of God that they belong to me." Now, this is why it works out so well that this guardian angel is the angel of Esav. What better angel would there be to ask to make sure to say that the blessings are legitimately belong to Yaakov than Esav is than the angel's malach? Because now for sure Yaakov is getting back. He's saying that you must say explicitly that I meant for the blessings to go to Yaakov. I sold them. There's nothing more to dispute. Okay. So now Yaakov is informed his name is going to be changed. And he said, "No longer," says the angel to Yaakov, "no longer will it be said that your name is Yaakov, but Yisrael, for you have striven with the divine and with human and have overcome." So when Yaakov hears this, he says, "Now I want you to divulge to me, what's your name?" And he said, "Why didn't you inquire of my name?" And he blessed him there. Get ready for an unbelievable vart. So he said, "No longer will your name be called Yaakov." And that is, "No longer will you be called Yaakov," derivative from the word Ekev, from heel, outwitting, deceit. That you attain this blessing through outwitting and deceit, as Esav had charged, but rather you got it from prevailing, Yisrael, Sichrara. You prevail, therefore it belongs to you. There is no deceiving here whatsoever. "For you have striven with the divine and with the human, and you've overcome." For you have striven with the divine, that means the angel, and as much as you have strove with the angel, you were unable to and the angel was unable to defeat you. "And inasmuch you struggle with men," that's Lavan and Esav, "who intended to harm you, but they were not able to." Likewise, we see with Lavan. This is going to happen to Lavan and Esav as well. So then he says, "Divulge, tell me, what is your name? What is your name? Mashmecha." So what Yaakov means by this question is, "What is your name?" He says, "I know that an angel only has one mission to do. So if you tell me your name, I'll know if your mission is done or not, because your name is the reflective of what your mission is. So please tell me what your name is, because every angel has only one specific function to do, and that will be reflected in your name. What's your mission?" And their names of angels change according to their mission. "Why do you inquire of my name?" And you bless them there. Okay, so Reb Leib Chassman, who is Mashkiach in Chevron Yeshiva, Talmud of Kelm, had a great vart here. I said this vart to great Rosh Yeshivas, it just blows them away. If you're really impressed, that means you're a Rosh Yeshiva type of person. The Malach says, so Yaakov says to him, "Mashmecha, what's your name?" And the angel answers him, "Namazat Tishalishmi. Why do you ask my name?" Said Reb Leib Chassman, "You know what the answer was? You want to know what my name is? My name is, I don't have a name. What's my name? I have no name. Lama zeh tishalishmi. My name is, I don't have a name. My name changes. One day it's Kavod. One day it's Hollywood. One day it's money. One day it's deceit. My name is, I have no name. Whatever the Yetzer is, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get you off the path. My name, which depicts what I am, I don't have one. Because it always depends. It could be worrying about a neighbor. It could be jealousy. Whatever it may be, that's my name. I can't tell you my name because it always changes. It's Hollywood, it's tinsel, it's covered. That is my name. I can't tell you more than that. Divulge your name. I have no name. I want to know the mission. So Yaakov named the place Penuel, for I have seen the divine face to face, yet my life was saved. The sun rose for him, and he passed Peniel, and he was limping on his hip. Therefore the children of Israel are not to eat the displaced sinew of the hip socket to this day. Because he struck Yaakov's hip socket, get an usha. Okay, says the Sporno, we don't eat that. I must tell you that I saw many Mefarshim explain why it is we don't eat the Gid Hanusha, that hip socket, and all the reasons. I'm still waiting for one that sounds the most compelling. Says the Sporno that by not eating that part of the thigh, Jews have demonstrated that the limb in which Yaakov was injured is unessential to us. We can manage without it. As a matter of fact, this part, I don't know enough of animal anatomy, but the Gid Hanusha is an area that is very hard to porge, to take away the fat and the sinews that we're not allowed to eat. In America, in the United States, people don't, they just sell this part of the animal to non-Jewish butchers. In Israel, where it's more costly meat, so they work it great to porge, you need a real expert butcher who can cut away the part that's not kosher and remain the part that is kosher. So the Torah says, in punishment for having left their father alone, that's why he was hit in the hip. So Yaakov raises his eyes and he saw, behold, we're now in the 33rd chapter, Esav was coming by 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two handmaids. He put the handmaids and their children first, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph last. Then he saw, and then he himself went on ahead of them and bowed earthward seven times as he approached his brother. It's very apparent now that the appeasement, the gift, didn't work because Yaakov, Esav, is now coming with his 400 men, so the gift part didn't work. We're getting ready now for battle. But Yaakov doesn't want to rely on a miracle, so he used every possible precaution. And we see here also from Yaakov's reaction, that despite the fact we're assured God's blessing, nonetheless, we have to take every act of precaution, every act of ishtadlus, to protect ourselves. This is very clear, says Rosh Hashanah Hirsch, from the behavior of Yaakov. This Rachel, this Yosef, Rachel and Yosef are last. From here we learn out the rabbinic principle, Achron, Achron, Chaviv. The very last one is the dearest. So Yaakov's hope is that if there in fact will be a battle, perhaps Esav's anger can be assuaged with the massacre of those in front, and it'll spare those in the rear. And now Esav runs towards him, embraces him, he fell upon his neck, and he kissed him, and they wept. Now the preliminaries are over. Yaakov now confronts Esav. He doesn't know if the result will be a bloody result, a bloody battle, or it's going to be brotherly consolation. But Rashi notes that it says over here, and he kissed him. There are dots over the word to kiss, to teach us one of two interpretations. That either he did not kiss him wholeheartedly, Esav really didn't, he kissed him, but he didn't really mean it. Or, a well-known tradition, Esav hates Yaakov. But at that moment, Esav's mercy was aroused, and he kissed Yaakov with genuine feeling. But as a rule, Esav's only Yaakov. Esav only hates the Jewish people, and he means business. But Yivku, they're both weak. He asks, who are these to you? And he says, these are my children. He says, these are the children whom God has graciously given your servant. Then the handmaids came forward. They and their children and they bowed down. Leah too came forward with her children and they bowed down. And afterwards Yosef and Rachel came forward, and they bowed down. And he asked, what did you intend by that whole camp that I met? And he answered, to gain favor in my Lord's eyes. I just wanted to show you, Esav, that I'm trying to appease you. And Esav said, I have plenty, my brother. Yesh li ravachi, I have plenty. Let what you have remain yours. You don't give me all this gift. Don't give me anything. I don't want anything. My eyeball. He says it. He certainly doesn't mean it. Yesh li rav, I have no need for your gifts. As Rabbi Victor Nevensal says, Yesh li ravachi. We don't have to go to rabbi. Yesh li rav, I have one. I do. Don't worry. Yesh li ravachi. I have a rabbi. I can do things my way. Okay. But Yaakov said, no, I beg of you, I have after all found favor in your eyes, then accept my tribute from me, inasmuch as I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of divine being, and you are appeased by me. Please accept my gift which was brought to you, inasmuch as God has been gracious to me, and inasmuch as I have everything. And he urged him and accepted him. Yeah, we all knew in the end Esav was going to take the money. Now listen to the haughtiness of Esav. Yaakov says, who are these children? These are the children that God graciously has given to your servant. And because God has been gracious to me. And we never find Esav invoking God's name. Yaakov said all the time, this is all gifts of God. And Esav said, I have plenty. I don't need anything, I have plenty. Esav says, and so gracious of God has given me. What a different approach. Therefore I have seen your face, which is like the face of the divine being. In other words, if I have found favor in your eyes, so what's doing here, Yaakov is trying to put fear in Esav's eyes by saying like this. Listen, I can survive an angel if I see one. I don't know if you, Esav, can survive like I did. So therefore, we have here an angel. You should be a little bit concerned at this point. So Esav is saying, Yesh li rav, I have everything. And Yaakov says, he wants to know, who is this? So Yaakov says, "Kachnas brichasi asher chavas ki chanani elokim v'chi yesh li kol." I don't have plenty; I have everything. I may not have wealth, but everything I need, God has provided for me. Ki chanani elokim, God has been gracious to me; He's given me everything. Yaakov speaks modestly, just to say what he has, that constitutes everything. But Esav says, like a boasting, "I have plenty, but I need more." And Yaakov says, listen, take the gift. I have everything I need. Take it. I won't be missing it because God has given me all that I need. I have life and health. I don't need all these possessions. Take it. I don't need it. Take it. And he said, go on, travel on your own pace. I will proceed at your pace. How are we doing?
33.
Okay, listen up, folks. But he said to him, my Lord knows that the children are tender, and the nursing flocks and herds are upon me. If they will be driven hard for a single day, then all the flocks will die. Let my Lord go ahead of his servant, and I will make my way at my slow pace according to the gate of the drove before me. So Yaakov really here has learned the game of how to trick his brother. So he says the following. He is just so anxious about coming from Esav, he comes up with this great technique. Listen here, Esav, I don't want to hold you back. You're in a rush. You just go. Go as quickly as possible. And Yaakov says, listen, Esav, I can't entertain your offer. Just go ahead. Listen here. My Lord, the children are tender. The oldest son, Reuven, he's only 12 years old now. Everyone has a little pitzkalach. I can't go like this. The trip will be so dangerous for them. And the sheep and the cattle, the herds are upon me. I have to drive them slowly, says Rashi. I can't. If I drive them quickly, then they're liable to die. And if they will be driven for a single day, so if I'm going to drive them in your honor to keep pace, then it'll be detrimental. It'll be devastating. They'll die. And all the flocks will die. They'll die from fatigue, says Rashi. Now, Yaakov's primary concern was for his frail children. But here we learn another principle. He's worried about his children. The principle is you never want to say something explicitly meaning. You don't want to mention death explicitly in their case. Because where I said we have a covenant with the lips. And therefore, we prefer to say something very around, not directly, in a non-explicit statement. Because if we say something explicitly, it can actually be fulfilled. He didn't want to say, then they will die, because then that would imply that also the children would die, which is something we don't want to say. So you find another way. I can't do this to the sheep and cattle. And that, even though he's really concerned about his children. So he says, let my Lord go ahead before his servant. He says, listen here. Come on, Esav, listen up. Don't prolong your journey. Take your time, take your speed, as Rashi says. You will far outdistance us. And as Rashi's made clear, I'm not asking you to lead the way. Just go at your own pace and don't take account of me. And to conclude, let my Lord go ahead of his servant. I'll make my way at my slow pace, according to the gate of the drove before me and the gate of the children, till I come to my Lord at the Seir. Then Esav said, let me assign to you some of the people who are with me. Because Esav said, listen, let me help you out. I'll give you protection. I'll give you people. And he said, to what purpose? Let me just have favor my Lord's eyes. That's all I want. I was riding on a plane, and I got kicked up into the business section. And in the same section was Rav Scheinberg Shlita, the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Or, one of the Gedolei Ador. And he's sitting there with all of his tzitzis and busy learning. And unwittingly, he hit one of the creature comforts, and he pushed this call button for the stewardess. Stewardess came running over and said, Kenad, she had no idea who this great rabbi was. Kenad oni. What can I get for you? And he said, Siyata Deshmaya. And so the nurse, the stewardess asked me, what does he want? He wants him. I said, he wants heavenly assistance. I'm not sure if you can provide that for him, but that's what he's looking for. Doesn't need anything else. That's what he wants. And Esav is saying, listen, I'll take care of you. I'll give you protection. Yaakov has no interest in it whatsoever. Okay, let's end by saying this following pasuk, and we'll end here. Yaakov nasa Sukkot, and Yaakov travels to Sukkot. Even though Bait, he built himself a house. And for his livestock, he made shelters. Shelters means a sukkah. Alken karshem hamakom ahu Sukkot. Here we call that place Sukkos. Bikasha. He builds himself a house, and he builds his sheep, his flock, a sukkah. Therefore, he called the place sukkah. So call it bayis. He built him, what's more important, a house for himself or a sukkah for his sheep and cattle? So the Chassidus Shetaych is like this, is that once a year we leave our house, our bedrock, we go out into sukkah where we are surrounded by God's holy presence, and we realize that this world is ephemeral, and our house, a castle, a narishkeit, we just want to be under the ananei kavod, God's divine protection. That's what Yaakov meant. Even though he built himself a house, he realized the ikkah, the most important thing, is a sukkah. A sukkah means I'm cognizant, a little shuckle from the wind, I feel it inside. If water can't come through, the sukkah is not a valid sukkah. So therefore, please, let me just call it, he calls it sukkah, because that's the kind of awareness that he had, where you're constantly in touch with God. You're surrounded by the mitzvah of sukkah. Okay, so I bid you farewell, and we'll meet again, Mirtz Hashem, next week.